Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. It is November 19th, 2021, and we brought it to you here live earlier today, the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse case. We'll have a few final words. Alec Murdoch, well, he just got a new indictment. Chad and Lori, guess what? They may have some more charges coming their way as well. The defense in the Ahmaud Arbery case has rested. Closing arguments are Monday. Let's talk about how that testimony went. The Thanks Dan attorney is going to be joining his friends in prison. A video from a barbershop you're not going to believe. And then Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger. That's right, he had a court appearance. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. That's right, I am a practicing criminal defense attorney, and I will explain to you the facts, the procedure, and the law of, well, current cases as well as cold cases. Welcome, enjoy the show. And if you haven't already done so, please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. And as always, leave me a comment below. I'm sure there's lots of people that have a lot to say today about what's in the news. Also, if you haven't done so already, please download on any of your apps the Crime Talk podcast. If you can't watch us, you can listen to not only this program, but all of the other previous programs where we've talked about lots of interesting things. So please do so. Download us, Crime Talk with Scott Reich. You can go to Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Android, or Amazon, and you can listen to me all the time. Some people say I have a very nice voice and they go to actual sleep with Scott, or maybe I'm putting them to sleep. I don't know, but it depends on who you talk to. All right, we have a new partner here at Crime Talk. Let's introduce them. I'm excited to announce I am partnering with the number one leader in home title protection, Home Title Lock. The county clerk won't call you if someone changes title on your home, and homeowners insurance doesn't cover home title theft. Thieves can simply change ownership of your home from you to them. Then they take out loans on your home and just disappear. Anyone can be at risk of title fraud because your title information is public record. Home Title Lock will protect your home and assist you should any tampering or fraud occur during your active subscription. They offer 24/7 monitoring of your title and instant alerts if we detect tampering with your title or mortgage. Go to hometitlelock.com/crimetalk and use my code CRIMETALK to try out Home Title Lock risk-free for 30 days. That's hometitlelock.com/crimetalk and use my code CRIMETALK to try Home Title Lock risk-free for 30 days. All right, let's get to the docket today, November 19th, 2021, a date that will be remembered as, well, the day that Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty of all counts after 4 days of deliberations. He is a free man. Now, outside the court, the defense lawyer, Mark Richards, said Rittenhouse was feeling a huge sense of relief at the verdict, and he is on his way home. He wants to get on with his life. Now, as the first verdict was read, and like I said, we brought it to you live. You can watch it here on the channel. Rittenhouse started to shake and fought back tears, but by the end, he could no longer keep composed, basically collapsed, and hugged his attorney. Huge sigh of relief. I commented when we were bringing it to you live the fact that the defense attorneys looked very concerned. I heard a conversation with the defense attorney after the verdict, and he stated obviously he was concerned, as I had mentioned, that the longer it goes and with the lesser included offenses that were being offered that the defense objected to, they were quite concerned that the jury would compromise and find Rittenhouse guilty of some charge, whether the original charge or a lesser included offense, and that did not happen. Now, I've already seen in the comments a lot of people are quite ecstatic about this verdict, and other people are, well, let's say not enthused that Rittenhouse was convicted. Now, as I've mentioned before, hey, The jury has spoken. This is the collective judgment of those 12 jurors, 7 women, 5 men, and 1 African-American gentleman on the jury panel. They take their jobs as jurors very seriously, hence the reason it took 3.5 to 4 days to do their deliberations. They know that this was important, and guess what? They're the ones that saw every piece of evidence. They had an opportunity to go back and listen to, obviously hear the arguments, but look at the evidence again. And guess what? If you can't be upset with Kyle Rittenhouse because the prosecution had the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is required under the law, that Kyle Rittenhouse be proven guilty to that standard. The prosecution failed to do that. And the law written by the legislature said that Kyle Rittenhouse was justified in doing what he did. You may not like it, but it's the law. And guess what? There's lots of laws that I disagree with, but it doesn't change the fact. You have to be a realist. So if you're super upset and you think that Kyle Rittenhouse was absolutely guilty, I strongly urge you to go watch every moment of the trial and read the jury instructions so that you can see what the jury had to consider, not just one's political side, their argument that they have immediately decided early on before any evidence was presented in this case. Little intellectual honesty can go a long way. That may cost me a few subscribers or so, but the reality of it is, listen, the system is the system, and whether you like it or not, it's not going to change. Hopefully, nobody goes out and burns anything down. Protest all you want. Just don't harm anybody. Don't destroy any property whatsoever. But if you get in trouble, call a defense attorney. All right. Murdoch has 27 charges in 5 separate indictments, 7 counts of money laundering, 7 counts of obtaining signature or property by false pretense, and 8 counts of computer crime, 1 count of forgery, 4 counts of breach of trust and fraudulent intent. Now, what do those really mean? Really quick, let's talk about it. First, the 7 counts of money laundering, basically trying to deceive money coming in, not being accounted, and basically trying to avoid taxes. 7 counts of obtaining signature or property by false pretenses. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, that's fraud. You can't take a thing of value, well, by lying to get it. That's fraud, not good. 8 counts of computer crime, probably allegedly used a computer in the process of submitting claims, completing forms, as well as the 1 count of forgery, which is basically a forgery can be anything where you sign somebody else's name, alter a document in some way, and then 4 counts of breach of trust and fraudulent intent. What does that really mean? Well, something that you had a fiduciary duty to protect somebody, i.e. a client, a family member, somebody where you've gauged an agreement to look out for their best interests, and you don't, and you commit fraud in it. Not good. It's almost like the judge knew something was coming down, and hence the reason why, well, he didn't get a bond. Clearly a danger to the community. Can't imagine the lawyers for Alec Murdoch are going to get any relief on their motion to the Supreme Court asking for a bond to be set. Now, the indictments involve alleged crimes from 5 South Carolina counties: Bamberg, Orangeburg, Beaufort, Cullerton, and Allendale. Now, Alex Murdoch stands accused of defrauding victims and the laundering of nearly $5 million. The bulk of the crimes, totaling nearly $3.5 million, allegedly occurred in Beaufort County. That's in South Carolina. That's where the Southern Command to Crime Talk is located. Shocking, because everyone in the South is so nice. But apparently there's criminals everywhere. Who would have thunk it, right? And also charges in Hampton County, where Murdoch resides. Now, this doesn't really appear to add much new to the case other than additional charges. According to Murdoch's attorney, Jim Griffin, he told the Hilton Head newspaper that it's really no big deal. Now, sources close to the investigation say that 9 of the new charges are related to the botched Gloria Satterfield settlement, and Alex Murdoch has been in jail now for more than a month on the 2 felony counts by obtaining property by false pretenses. Now, Murdoch is obviously accused of orchestrating a scheme to steal millions of dollars from Satterfield's family through her wrongful death settlement. The attorneys for the families, Eric Bland and Ronald Richter, recently uncovered a shocking paper trail allegedly showing how Alex Murdoch allegedly stole $3.6 million from the Satterfield settlement. That's big money, ladies and gentlemen. I just can't imagine anybody would have paid $3.6 million on something like that. So there has to be a ton of other fraud on the backside that's being represented to the insurance company. I can't wait to see how this comes out. And there's also information that revealed that Alex Murdoch paid Eddie Smith more than $155,000 in an eight-month span starting late last year. Now, Smith is Murdoch's co-conspirator for the alleged suicide-for-hire insurance fraud scheme and also a former client of Murdoch who allegedly thought that thought of Murdoch like a brother. On top of all that, attorneys for Murdoch have claimed Smith was Murdoch's longtime drug dealer, responsible for fomenting Murdoch's apparently well-hidden addiction to prescription pain pills over the last 20 years. Now, Murdoch's attorneys have said that the drug addiction is partially to blame for Murdoch's spat of alleged financial crimes brought to light in the months since his wife and son Maggie and Paul were murdered. Now, the last payment Murdoch is accused of making to Smith came on May 28th, just 10 days before the June 7th slaying of Maggie and Paul outside the family's home in Colleton County. Now, no suspects have been charged in connection to their deaths, but Alex Murdoch himself has not been ruled out as a person of interest. It would seem as though Mr. Smith may be one as well. Each of the payments came in the form of 17 cashier's checks between October 2020 and May of 2021. Each of the checks were reportedly written from the same bank account in which Murdoch is accused of depositing millions of dollars of wrongful death settlements to Gloria Satterfield. As for the payments to Eddie Smith, confidential sources have said that Murdoch was writing checks to someone who would then pay a courier to obtain drugs for Murdoch from members of the well-known Colleton County street gang known as the Cowboys. Now, while reportedly making large payments to Smith earlier in the year, Murdoch also received even larger loans from a former law partner, John Parker, during the same time frame. And in a lawsuit for the debt collection filed in late October, Parker alleged he loaned Murdoch $150,000 in March of 2021, then another $77,000 in May. Now, that lawsuit didn't specify what the loans were for. Now, loans from Parker preceded yet another loan of $250,000 to Murdoch in July after Maggie and Paul were murdered, making the grand total of $477,000. Ladies and gentlemen, what is going on? I'm telling you, we have to find out what he was spending this money on. I don't think he was spending that much on drugs. Was it hookers and blow? I don't know. But this man was spending a lot of money real quick, and he didn't have a whole lot to show for it. That's usually what happens when somebody's spending other people's money. Maybe the court-appointed controllers of the Murdoch's finances will be able to figure that out. And the court has obviously issued a stay of potential reimbursement to anybody after Murdoch quickly confessed judgment days after the lawsuit was filed by Mr. Parker. I'm telling you, when this case happened years ago regarding Paul Murdoch and the death of Mallory Beach, I said this case, there's something not right. This is going to be a big case. And turns out it is. That just gets deeper and deeper. I think we're going to find out all the dirt as we dig deep into the bowels of South Carolina politics and legal community. It's going to get good. All right, next, Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell. Now, they could have some more problems. Police in Arizona have asked prosecutors to review charges against Chad and Lori for conspiracy of attempted murder in connection with an incident involving Lori's former nephew-in-law, Brandon Boudreau. The request came Tuesday after the Gilbert Police Department spent the past 2 years investigating the October 2nd, 2019 attempted shooting of Boudreau. Courts and police records show Boudreau, Melanie Pawlinski's former husband, were in a contentious divorce at the time of the shooting. Now, based on evidence obtained during the investigation, police believe Alex Cox, Lori's brother, and Pawlinski's uncle drove a green Jeep Wrangler from Rexburg, fired a single shot at Boudreau, and missed. Cox then drove back to Idaho, and he cannot face charges since he died, obviously, in December of 2019 at his home what medical examiners say were natural causes. Now, police reports show that evening after Cox is believed to have shot Boudreaux, Lori searched the internet for man shot in Gilbert, Arizona, man shot in Gilbert, Arizona, 10-2-2019, and ABC News Brandon Boudreaux. The Jeep driven by Alex Cox made it to Rexburg around 4:30 a.m. on October 3rd of 2019, hours after Cox returned. He and Lori were seen on surveillance cameras moving the single wheel tire and a back seat out of the Jeep from a storage unit. Investigators spoke to Polinsky the day after the shooting, and she denied knowing anything about the incident. Police said Polinsky could not explain details of what she was doing when Cox is believed to have shot at Boudreaux. Polinsky did not want to share her phone numbers of Alex Cox and Lori because she believed their phones could be tracked and listened to, according to police. Now, following the shooting, investigators in both Arizona and Idaho learned that Polinsky, Cox, Chad, and Lori were close, and Polinsky moved to the same apartment complex in Rexburg and married a man named Ian Polinsky. As the investigation unfolded, police seized the Jeep in Rexburg. Not only did police find Cox's DNA in the Jeep, but also gunshot residue around the back window. Pretty convincing evidence, you would say. Gunshot residue doesn't get in cars unless somebody's fired a firearm from the car. All right, the Ahmaud Arbery case. The defense teams for the three white men accused in the Ahmaud Arbery killing rested Thursday afternoon after presenting their case for 2 days, and they called seven witnesses, including Travis McMichael, one of the defendants, to take the stand. As you may recall, the defense said they had 33 witnesses and it could take at least another week to present their case. Well, you always want to be prepared, but less is more in a defense case, that's for sure. Now, the defense attorneys rested their case following the prosecution's cross-examination of Travis McMichael, as well as testimony from several residents in the neighborhood where the shooting took place, among them a woman by the name of Cindy Clark, who testified that she lived in the Satilia Shores neighborhood since 2004 and was aware of petty crime incidents since 2006. Another resident, Subi Lawrence, said she was an administrator for a neighborhood Facebook page in which she would keep up with what people said about crime in the area and was in touch with a neighbor who would alert her if there were suspicious people lurking at a nearby home under construction, so that she could get her child inside. Now, after Arbery's shooting, she testified Travis McMichael asked her to accept him in the Facebook group with a different last name because his account had been hacked so that he could look at what people were saying. Now, the closing arguments in the trial will begin on Monday morning. Lawyers for one of the defendants, William Roddy Bryan, the man who admitted to pursuing and boxing in Arbery with his vehicle and also filmed the fatal shooting, have asked prosecutors for a plea deal. Now, Arbery's family attorney, Lee Merritt, said the prosecution turned it down flat out. This was one of those cases where there shouldn't be any plea deals. The jury needs to decide. And I don't think it's going to be a good verdict for the defense in this particular case. And hey, sometimes as a defense attorney, you always kind of root for the defense. But in this business, I've told you before, you have to be a realist. You have to look at the law and the facts. You can't have a cause when it comes to criminal defense cases. You have to look at each client individually. Here's a criminal defense attorney just went a little too far. A now former Pittsburgh lawyer who once boasted in a quirky online ad seen worldwide that he thinks like a criminal admitted Tuesday that, well, he is one. Daniel Musick pled guilty to conspiring to distribute 100 kilograms or more of marijuana and possession of marijuana following a 2019 investigation by an FBI task force. Musick, 39, admitted that his apartment on Covod Street was a stash house and base of operations for the network. Musick had a viral ad on YouTube that showed his friends pretending to commit crimes, and then Musick asking, "Need a criminal defense lawyer? Then you should hire a lawyer who thinks like a criminal." FBI's Safe Street Task Force in April 2019 obtained wiretaps on a phone used by drug dealer Chadlin Levy of Wilkins, the heroin and cocaine supplier for the SCO drug gang in Braddock, who had since gone to prison. The taps revealed that Levy was also dealing marijuana and that his source was Jack Eck. The wiretap showed that Eck resupplied Levy on Fridays, and prior to meeting with Levy, Eck would meet up with Wayne Barker, who operated the stash house with Musick, to get marijuana. Agents watched Eck and others carrying large trash bags, usually with a sticker indicating the type of marijuana, out of the apartment and putting them in vehicles parked on the street. Now, law enforcement agents pulled over the vehicle and found some $400,000 in boxes that Music and Rodriguez had been carrying. A search of the apartment turned up numerous boxes of marijuana, packaging material, the vacuum sealer, and a money counter. The marijuana weighed 404 pounds. Music was responsible for the sale and distribution of between 100 and 400 kilos of marijuana. The matter is set for sentencing in March. Music faces a mandatory 5 years in prison. Now, if anyone's ever seen the video, it was rather witty and funny, all right? People doing various things and saying, thanks, Dan. But it just is sad that he crossed the line and is now a defendant and will no longer be an attorney. No such thing as easy money, that's for sure. Every time I've ever thought a case was going to be easy money, guess what? It always turned into be the biggest pain in the butt ever. And old Dan Music now has realized that whatever he was making, he could have made a lot more over the next 5 years that he's going to be in prison. All right, now here's a video that is, it's just crazy, okay? And we can't put this video up because YouTube will shut us down. So I think what we have to do is we're going to put it up on our Patreon page, but I'm telling you, this thing is crazy. So a Baltimore police sergeant was getting his hair cut on a Saturday afternoon when a gunman burst in and shot the barber as the police officer's in the chair getting his hair cut. And the officer's basically trying to get out of the way, and the gunman basically tells him to get out of the chair because he had no beef with him. He didn't know he was a police officer. He was off duty in civilian attire. The sergeant then quickly drew his own weapon and fired at the shooter, killing him. The suspect was later identified as 38-year-old Carlos Ortega, and he had allegedly been on a shooting spree that day and attacked two other people earlier that day. One of the victims was 44-year-old Javier Villegas Cota, also a barber, was gunned down outside the shop where he worked and died from his wounds. The other man was injured in a separate location and was still in critical condition. Now, the off-duty sergeant, who has not been named, was not in uniform at the time of the attack and remained unharmed. Investigators are trying to figure out how the three shootings are related, and the off-duty sergeant has been placed on administrative leave while the incident is being investigated. So, for our Patreon members, if you go and take a look at this, remember, it is graphic, but it almost doesn't look real. And man, it happens just so fast. All right, a lot going on the last couple of days. You gotta love the end of the year. Everybody's trying to get all their cases wrapped up. Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger, appeared in federal court yesterday for a pretrial hearing in his child abuse sex material case, during which the prosecution revealed that one of their proposed witnesses is in fact his father, Jim Bob Duggar. Now, Josh, 33, has been charged with receiving and possessing child abuse materials of the sexual nature, and he pled not guilty following an April arrest and was released pending trial. That trial is scheduled to begin November 30th, so we're just a couple of weeks away. Well, on Thursday, Judge Timothy Brooks ordered an evidentiary hearing with witnesses to be held on a day before the trial of November 29th. The decision for an evidentiary hearing came about due to a dispute over the prosecution's notice that they may introduce evidence regarding Josh Duggar's past molestation scandal. Because remember, in 2015, news broke that Josh had allegedly molested five underage girls as a teenager. Two of his sisters, Jill Duggar, and also Jessa Duggar Seawald, who's now 29, they both came forward as two of the victims. Well, of course, the defense filed a motion to exclude that evidence. Why? Because it would be devastating to his case. But they're going to make a more eloquent argument and say that it's prejudicial and its probative value is not exceeded by the prejudicial effect, and therefore you should keep it out, and we're going to turn this into a sideshow, etc. And the prosecution wants to bring it in to show kind of absence of mistake. This just didn't happen as an accident, that he's got a thing for young girls, allegedly, of course. Now, during the Thursday hearing, one of the lawyers said that he disagrees adamantly with the prosecution's notice about the molestation scandal and their plan to call on two witnesses, one of whom was, I said, Jim Bob. That's right, Jim Bob Duggar. And earlier this week, the judge in his current case granted Josh's motion to exclude the past statement about having a addiction, meaning it cannot be used at the trial. So Josh did, in fact, get a little bit of love there. But when it's your computer and there's a bunch of images on it and the government can trace it directly to you, Josh, he's got some problems and he may want to just try and see about a last minute plea deal. Just saying. If not, let's go to trial. And unfortunately, there are no television cameras in a federal trial. If I had the time, I certainly would go down there and watch this one because it's going to be interesting. All right. Finally, we're going to do a quick recap of our dumb criminals throughout the week. Monday, the New Jersey police are looking for a suspect who is wanted in connection with allegedly stealing two trailer ramps. The man was caught on the company's Ring doorbell stealing the ramps. Tuesday, Dewey J. Smith was arrested after being caught carrying victims' credit cards and IDs. The deputies found a marinara sauce on the floor handles of the car being broken into and an empty pizza box. Smith was reportedly seen taking pizza out of the neighbor's garage, out of the neighbor's garage can, and was caught red-handed. Wednesday, Christopher Callen beat up his cellmate in Key West after complaining that his cellmate would stink up the cell with his farts and failed to give a courtesy flush. Thursday, Mark Henson was charged with felony criminal mischief in connection to a fire at the Pulse nightclub. Henson set fire to a memorial for the victims of the Pulse nightclub shooting, and no motive has been given as to why Henson wanted or did in fact destroy the memorial. And then today, Friday, that's right, Crime Talk's dumb criminal of the day. Local authorities in East Tennessee arrested a man in relation to a recent theft after stealing a log splitter through an insane finding at the crime scene. The Anderson County Sheriff's confirmed the arrest of Hugh John Sieber after finding his severed finger in the victim's driveway. The sheriff's office then called the local hospital to see if anyone had been admitted for a missing finger. The sheriff's office was told Sieber had been dropped off at the Methodist Medical Center emergency room for a missing finger. Sieber was interviewed by a detective and later charged. Now, the Anderson County Sheriff's Russell Barker proudly said Mr. Sieber's finger pointed us in the right direction, which led him to being charged. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Remember, we can agree to disagree. We can just be respectful whether people like a verdict or they don't. Guess what? Really doesn't matter what we think. The only thing that mattered is what the jury decided. You have to respect the decision. May not like it. There's been lots of jury decisions I didn't like, but I had to live with it. All right, we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.